Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions for him during the next half an hour. Call those in to 496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org and tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. You almost weren't here today because you almost had to serve jury duty. Is that right?
It was close. I got called yesterday and said that I didn't have to come in, that the trial had been canceled for the time being, and so yes, it was, we were right on the edge, but it worked out.
It wasn't the kind of thing where it was like, you know, he does have the show to do. I was joking with your secretary when she sent me the note saying she said, you know, the mayor might have to do jury duty, and I said, well, obviously the people who do jury duty don't listen to Ask the Mayor.
Well, it's an important part of all of us being good citizens to, if we're called, but I didn't have to do that, and probably not real likely I would have got chosen, but I certainly would have went and participated if need be.
Well, let's move on to questions that have come in from some of our listeners since you were on the show last. We'll start with one from Nicole, who writes, I frequent downtown and have noticed the once beautiful house on the southwest corner of Columbia Street and North 8th Street is rapidly falling apart. Once boarded up windows are now open to the elements. Who owns this property, she says. I believe it's a designated historical spot. Does this designation hinder an owner or a potential buyer's ability to renovate the structure? It's a shame to see such a unique house deteriorate, she says. I wonder if there's anything the city can do to help.
Well, yeah, that house is, for folks that have been here for a while may remember it, it was the Fitzgerald House, and it's been there for a long time. It certainly is an historic structure. It has went over the last several years through many different private owners. Different people have looked at it to try to renovate it. And several years ago, but while I was the mayor, this I don't remember exactly which year, the city did put some CDBG money into the house to kind of help stabilize the foundation. We were trying to help an owner at that point get that house fully renovated. It does need a lot of work and back into a useful condition. Unfortunately, they couldn't make the financial numbers work, and that didn't work out. So since then, it's went through a couple different owners. Now, I will tell you, in the last couple months, we do have two people that are interested in purchasing that from the current owner, and they are both members of the community that have done other projects, and we would be very excited if one of them was able to acquire that property. They plan to restore it. One of the challenges are, and one of the potential buyers has called us, and we have told him we'd certainly support this, is there's not room on the property to put a garage or really even any decent parking or even any covered parking. So that makes it a little bit difficult, especially if you're going to make it into a couple different units. So they have asked us if we would consider, there is a provision in our parking ordinance, and we don't do this a lot. We do it over on Ferry Street a little bit, that would allow us to create actually a permit for on-street parking, and so there would be some designated parking spots there for the residents of that home. And in an interest, as your caller indicated, it is a neat historic home that we'd like to sell, and in the interest of trying to preserve that and make that happen, we have told them that we would take that to the parking commission to create that permit parking. If that helps the deal go through and they can make the numbers work to get that renovated, because as like the caller said, we would love to see that renovated back into its former glory and that house saved.
A couple other questions have come in. Bert sent this to us. He says, ask Mayor Rozworski if he will oppose Lafayette becoming a sanctuary city and if Lafayette law enforcement will, his words now, enthusiastically cooperate with ICE in enforcing federal immigration law.
Well, the city of Lafayette's not going to become a sanctuary city. I've said that before. And we do cooperate with federal officials, whether it's immigration issues, drug issues, fugitive issues. We've always cooperate with federal officials and follow the law. I'm not sure exactly what he means enthusiastically, but we will. I've said this before also, so my position not changed. We are not going to become agents of ICE. We are not going to be out trying to round round people up and do those types of things. We are not going to do that. I've been clear on that position. But if there are situations where ICE, under the proper protocols of law enforcement and the rules of and laws of this country, need our assistance with something, we would certainly follow the laws and rules of this country. But we're not going to become an extension of ICE out here trying to round people up. I've made it clear. The problem is we need a comprehensive immigration policy. I think we all understand we need border security, but we need an immigration policy that allows the people coming to this country for the right reasons, that are looking for a better life, looking to find good jobs. And Lord knows we need people that are willing to work. We need a policy that gets them through in a reasonable period of time and allows them to become contributing members of this country, and this country become their own also, and do it in a way that does protect us from those that would be coming here for reasons that are not appropriate. But we need an immigration policy that works and makes sense and based on common sense.
We actually got a question from Andrea shortly after the last show aired. And so, Andrea, sorry it's taken so long to get you an answer. And this was right around the time we were getting a big snowfall. She says, why are there no sidewalks from Romney Meadows Apartments to the shopping on Old 231 South near the Payless, the Walgreens, and the gas stations? She says, when it snowed, people were walking through snow piles on the side of the road.
Well, there's two. That's a kind of a two-part question. One, that road is a state highway, so it's not a city street. So that's the main reason right now that there is not sidewalks along that road. The good news is that Teal Road from out by Tippecanoe Mall all the way through past Jeff High School, all the way through town, down 4th Street and out to 25, is slated to be rebuilt by the state beginning this year. Now, that's about a three-year project to rebuild all that. And that portion of the road, when it's rebuilt, will have sidewalks. But with that being said, and I'm not sure if the caller is aware of that, the city, because we knew something needed to be done before that, built a 10-foot wide trail from the side entrance of Romney Meadows down to Twickenham Boulevard. Now there is a 10-foot wide trail all the way down to 231 over to Payless and over to those shopping centers. And then we did another piece coming down 231 right there by the Dairy Queen to Payless. And then there are sidewalks on one side of the Twickenham and trail on the other the rest of the way down. So if those residents will just come out the side entrance, and I suppose it might take you another two or three extra minutes of walking. It might be a little farther because you have to make a night. But there's a 10-foot wide trail that we plow and clean during snowstorms that they can walk to that shopping center with lights. It has lights along it, too. Very safe. And I'm just not quite sure why they wouldn't use the facility that's been provided to him, but it's there.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA, talking today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. If you have questions that you'd like to get to him in the next few minutes, call those in to 496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. So since we last talked to you, the candidate filing period for the primaries has ended. Little surprise that you did not wind up with a Republican challenger. I think a lot of people expected that to be the outcome. So let me ask you this. Does that mean that you get to spend your time differently in 2019? Because ostensibly, less time now has to be spent campaigning.
Well, again, that's kind of a two-part question also. One, it is still possible that I could have a candidate for the general election. According to state election law, once the primary is completed, the party, the Republican Party,
they could still slate
could
somebody.
Slate someone in.
But again, seems unlikely.
Seems unlikely, but I will prepare like it's likely. So between now and that time, I will certainly be campaigning, and I will certainly be fundraising and putting the structure in place to campaign and be ready to mount a full campaign. Should that happen. And I also will be working with the city council folks that have opponents. So we will be putting a campaign together. But to answer your question honestly, does it in somewhat change? Yes, the approach that I need to take at this point, yes. But we still will be doing a significant amount of campaign preparation in case that would present itself.
So let me ask about that, because one of the things that happens when you don't have contested races is that there are fewer debates, fewer joint public appearances, and in some cases, the candidate who is left by him or herself on the ballot isn't kind of pressed by an opponent to make campaign promises or say what they would improve if they were elected. In other words, give something to the voters to say, ah, well, I know if I vote for candidate X, then I stand to get this thing. How do you look at that as you are looking at what you're going to say to the voters in 2019? You could say, it's very easy for you and the other mayors on this program, all of whom are incumbents and running for re-election, look at the status quo. We think we've done a pretty good job. So let me be the non-existent opponent for a second and say, what are you going to give me as a constituent of yours in Lafayette if we vote for you again, even if you're unopposed in November?
Well, I think, you know, from just a campaign structure standpoint, we would talk about what we have accomplished in the last 4 years, and then we would lay out our vision for what we're doing. And quite frankly, I feel like we're pretty transparent here. If you listen to my State of the City that I did to the City Council, to the one I just did this week to for Greater Lafayette Commerce, you know, we lay out what we've done and what we're going to do in 19 and what that vision looks like for the next 3 or 4 years. And I think that's part of being an incumbent. I mean, it's different campaigning sometimes if you're a challenger as opposed to incumbent. The incumbent does have to run on their record, right? And lots of things are public meeting and public comments, and they're recorded, and people have known what you said, and you've got to live on that record and then show people what you're going to do in the future. And I think that's what we would do. We would stand on our record and we'd show people what we see coming in the next 4 years, which we've really laid out, because we've done a 5-year park master plan, we've done a 25-year water plan, a 20-year.
That all makes perfect sense, and a lot of that we talk about on this program,
right,
of course.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm asking is, would there be something that's a new, bright, shiny object that you could say, hey, if I need to get voters, I could offer them X? Is there something like that that we haven't talked about that's not the renovation of Five Points or a new Loeb Stadium or a new water slide at the park or something like that? Something that is not out there yet that you could say, I want to work towards this new thing?
Well, boy, Stan, that's a tough question. I mean, because we're, like I said, and again, I want to try to answer your question, but we are pretty transparent of laying out long-time visions, multi-year, of what we're going to try to do. And I don't really hide anything from anybody or have some...
Oh, no, not accusing you of hiding anything, but I'm just saying...
secret weapon in my back pocket for an election that I save in case I need to. I kind of believe on doing things right, being transparent, building on our quality of life initiatives, building on those plans that we have a lot of citizen input from. And so really a lot of what we do is citizen driven. And we talk about those big things, right? Help work with education, help with quality of life, workforce development, increasing the population. And, you know, one of the things I guess we don't talk a lot about on this show is that, you know, helping the city, working with the Jeff High School to complete that next phase of that, the technical high school that we're going to open up. That's going to be a big piece, I think, of the next 4 years of getting both wings of that open. And we don't talk a lot about that. So I will be putting some energy towards that I haven't put before. But I don't really have a big surprise in my back pocket.
You mentioned working with the other Democrats who are on the ticket. The only contested primary race is that there are 4 Democrats running for at-large city council seats, the 3 incumbents and Russell Bridges, somebody who's new. Is this somebody you know, Mr. Bridges?
I don't know him, only a little bit of what I've seen, a little bit on his Facebook page and some other things like that. I've met him once at a city council meeting, but other than that, I don't know him.
Obviously, at-large seats are city council people who represent the entire city and not just a single district. So there are those who look at that type of seat a little bit differently than representing a smaller geographic area within the city. How do you view that as the only contested race based on the fact that you're talking about people who you would think have to have a knowledge of everything that goes on around the entire city, not just responsive to the people who are in their neighborhoods? How should people vote for that sort of a seat?
Well, I think it's what you exactly what you said. That seat has to represent the entire, you know, as they all do to some extent, but that group really has to represent the entire vision for the community, what we do with economic development, how we look at overall infrastructure and how we look at road planning, how we look at recreational amenities. And so that, you know, that's a group that really looks at that long-term planning. And we have, you know, quite honestly, we have three, in my opinion, tremendous incumbents that bring a wealth of knowledge to that and has helped lead that vision for the last several years with me. That's led to us being with Forbes magazine. A lot of people don't know this. You know, we've been second a couple years, but we've actually been in the top 10 for 5 years in a row with Forbes magazine for the best small metros in the United States for business and careers. And so, you know, the group of incumbents that we have done a tremendous job helping fulfill that vision and helping move the community forward. And I think they have that experience. We've got a small business person on there. We've got some educators on there. And they've brought a wealth of knowledge that's been beneficial to the community.
Let's talk about the general election for a second. There are going to be some contested races here and in West Lafayette. What does the makeup of the city council, Democrat versus Republican, mean to you? You and the other mayors in this program have frequently said, as have many other mayors I've talked to, if you're doing the job of running a city right, it shouldn't matter whether there's an R or a D next to somebody's name. Is that your thought as you go into a race that's going to have several different contested positions with mostly Democrats, people from your party, defending seats on the Lafayette City Council?
Well, I mean, certainly the incumbents that we have on the city council, I plan to help them campaign and defend those seats because they have done a good job. And I think they have a strong record to stand on, and they've been loyal to this community and they've been loyal to the vision. And I think they deserve to continue in those roles if they choose to do so. And they have because they filed. So I certainly will help them defend those seats because I do believe that's important. But we have been blessed here that people from both parties working with mayors from different parties sit down and try to do, you know, the right thing for the right reasons. Now, with that being said, I don't know any of the challengers that we have, and not every person that files for office is doing it for the right reasons and will sit down or have the right skill sets to do it. So I certainly plan to, with the incumbents in our party, that they've done a great job. I think they have a great record to stand on. If they didn't, I'd tell you, but they do, and I will help them defend their seats.
We've got about 10 minutes left with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski on Ask the Mayor today here on WBAA. Call in your questions at 496-1999. Send emailed questions to ask@WBAA.org. I wanted to chat for a few minutes about the plan that Greater Lafayette Commerce has to develop what they're calling a brand identity for all of Greater Lafayette. And I got to thinking about it. You and John Dennis talk a lot about how you work well across the river with one another, and we talk about this idea of Greater Lafayette a whole lot. But there are some differences. Obviously, you've got a more blue-collar, manufacturing-heavy city. He's got a more white-collar, education-dependent city. So there are some differences. And mm-hmm. When you're building a brand identity, one of the pitfalls is you can't try to be everything to everyone, unless you're Amazon or Google, I guess. So how do you figure into the larger picture of trying to build a brand identity? And what do you want to see come out of this? How would you like your city to be marketed?
Well, you know, it's actually been a interesting process. We're working with a national firm because we, as you correctly indicated, we're looking at not just the identity, but how do we market ourselves to the rest of the United States and globally to attract the staff and professional people they need at Purdue and what they need for the Purdue Research Park, but also attract the machinists and the tool and die makers that we need at Caterpillar and Subaru and the people that we need for Kirby Risk and the people at GE that are putting together those engines. And so it is a multifaceted and a multi-layered approach to how do we tell our story. And we feel like we've got a great story to tell. But really what brought this about was we still find that there are lots of people that don't know everything that's going on at Purdue and West Lafayette, or going on in Lafayette with our advanced manufacturing. And if we're going to remain competitive, we've got to be able to tell that story for both sides of the river. So I think, well, not think, I mean, we have, as we've looked at it, we know that there's going to be a kind of a multi-layered approach to this campaign, because we do need to attract different types of people to do different jobs. And then we want to try to keep people here that are graduating from Purdue, and then people to boomerang back, and then people to move in. And so
it sounds like what you're looking for
is just raising your profile. We are raising our profile. And it's not just going to be one subtitle that we're trying to get to. It's an actual marketing campaign with different layers that, at the end of it, gets all the way down to, how do we do TV commercials? How do we do billboards? How do we do media that can get throughout the country and throughout the globe, that tells our story in a way that can attract the people and the businesses that we want? And we joke, but it's true. Lots of people leave and then boomerang back. And when we bring people in that come in with different companies, almost all the time they say, wow, we didn't realize what was here. We didn't realize you had a cool downtown, or, you know, West Lafayette had all these neat trails that linked to places. And we just all kind of scratching our heads still, like, okay, we have got to figure out a way so when people come here, we don't hear that over and over. Wow, we didn't realize. Wow, we didn't realize.
Do you have a sense of why that is? Is it that there are similar areas that are just telling their story better? Or are there other competitive aspects of you're losing out to area X over and over?
You know, we've never really worked. I mean, obviously Purdue can, and Purdue has, and that's why they've got some of the great things. But we need to transcend that even deeper to, we have never worked at telling our story globally in a coordinated effort between Lafayette, West Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, Purdue, GLC, working to tell a comprehensive story in a global way. I mean, we put things on different social medias, and we get in a few trade magazines and stuff, but, you know, how far does that really reach, right? I mean, you and I both know that only has a certain reach. And so
you want to reach the general public.
We do. And in a wide range, literally around the globe.
Are there areas that you are specifically competing against people who you find yourself in competition with on a consistent basis that you want to leapfrog ahead of?
No, not necessarily. I mean, there could be, and we wouldn't even know it, right? Because of the way site selectors work, and confidentiality and disclosure agreements that you, non-disclosure agreements that you have to sign now and stuff. And so you don't always even know who you're competing against in some of these. And you certainly don't know if you got bumped off the list, only made it to the top 10 and didn't even actually get a site visit. And so we have to try to get our message out to make sure we don't get bumped off those lists, and that we're selling the community and the quality of life along with Purdue, or just the name Subaru, some of the other things that are here. And we've never, as an entire group like we're doing now with the university and all this, we've never sat down and got near to the point where we are now, saying, how do we do this together, and how do we put out a marketing plan and an identity that literally can be used around the globe for the entire community?
It sounds like one of the things that might be helpful in this process, and I'm certainly no expert at it, but trying to figure out whether there's a perception of things that the community is missing that people would move here for, or that there's some black eye that you might not know about. For instance, there was that poll a couple of years ago that said West Lafayette is the worst college town in the Big Ten, and that got a lot of play. Are you trying to do this SWOT analysis, your strengths, your weaknesses, your opportunities, your threats? Are you trying to figure out what is causing people to overlook you over time?
Sure. I mean, we did exactly what you're saying with internal groups, with the company here, out in the community interviewing people from all different walks of life, all different businesses, trying to find out what people like, what they don't like, trying to look at peer cities. And then right now, as you're probably aware, we're doing that survey, which has went out, I think, to 15,000 people. And we're trying to get as many people as possible to fill out the survey to give us some ideas. And we've stressed exactly what you said. What do you like, but what don't you like, or what could we do? What could we do better? We've been very open that we want to hear it all, because it doesn't do us any good if we don't. We are all in on this, and to really figure out what it would take to what people see, what they think, and then what are those triggers that might get somebody's attention? Because, you know, you're in media, you're in this business. Sometimes people only listen for a little bit, or something's got to catch their attention to get them look a little bit deeper and maybe give you a second glance. And so we're trying to get down to that level, and we want to hear what people have to say and what we can try to do. And so, like I said, we are all in, and we hope people will take the time to fill out that survey. And then this is kind of the first phase, and we get this worked out, we plan to go into that second phase of then how do we take all this and turn it into an actual multimedia marketing campaign, and what does that look like?
Is one of the goals in all of this to keep Lafayette and West Lafayette as sort of co-equal as possible? Because I think for a long time you've sort of tacitly achieved that. And I know that there are people who worry a little bit. Todd Barton has expressed this with respect to the Wabash Heartland Innovation Network. He's expressed that he thinks that, for instance, Purdue and West Lafayette are getting the lion's share of the benefit from that, and communities like his are being left behind a little bit. And there have been people who have talked about that since Mitch Daniels has been president of Purdue, that's helped elevate them. But are others being, you know, the old saying is it's not enough to succeed, others must fail. How do you make sure that there is that maintaining of the co-equal greater Lafayette banner throughout all of this?
Sure. And that's why it's so wonderful to be from a community where people work together, because we have literally discussed what you just said in our meetings. How do we make sure that, you know, Purdue carries the size of the banner that they should be, the West Lafayette community in itself? Because as great as Purdue is, if people don't think West Lafayette would be a good place to live, it's still hard to attract companies to the research park and the professional staff that they want. And you have trailing spouses that might need jobs in industry, you know. And so we have talked about that, about how do we blend all of our aspects in a way that it really comes out as this is a comprehensive place. This is a place that works together, and that there are different opportunities for different people, and it doesn't get so centered that whether it would even be the other way, just looking too much at Lafayette, that people take one glance and they don't see enough and we lose them all. And we've talked about that, and we're working on that, you know, directly. It's like Mayor Dennis and I've said, which is not in the marketing right now, but our goal between the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation and what I'm doing downtown and what he's doing with his, going to be his new downtown in State Street, is when you went downtown, you'd think you were in this really large metropolitan area that makes us more competitive, but at the end of the night, you go back to two smaller communities that you really enjoy.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. I'm sure we'll talk more about this as it goes along, and we'll chat with you again next month.
All right, thanks, Dan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember to tune in at this time next week for our conversation with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Send your questions in advance of that show to our email address, ask@wbaa.org. And find all of these programs archived at the Ask the Mayor page on our website. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.